Hello. How are you? It's good to catch up, Mark.
I did my part and pushed out the link.
Not as nice a place as the
Right, everyone, if I could call room to order for the next session, please. Councillors, please, could you take your seats at the table? The next session is about to begin.
If we can all please sit down again and resume the session.
Everyone, can we have your seats at the table ready for the next session, please? Right, so are we ready to begin the recording? Good, all right. Is Jonathan Zook in the room? Jonathan Zook, are you here? Oh, great. Welcome, Jonathan. Right, so the next session, as we commence the second part of the morning sessions here, is on from a report back from the Data and Metrics Policy Making Working Group. It's an update, so, and that'll be presented to us by Jonathan Zook. Welcome, Jonathan. Over to you.
It's a pleasure. This is formally called the Non-PDP Working Group on Data and Metrics for Policy Development, and I went ahead and checked the free dictionary in there. In fact, 87 different acronyms for PDP, and so I'm thinking we should just add process development process. So we're renaming this particular working group the non-PDP PDP for PDPs. Because we're trying to make it sexier, you know, so that more people come. And so I've accomplished that today, and I appreciate your indulgence. Who's operating the slides? Can I just say next slide to somebody? Thank you. So this work group is basically focused on the increased use of data in both the evaluation of problems to be resolved by PDP processes, the issue reports generated by staff, and then also the use of data and also trying to change the culture around the review or the outcomes of PDPs down the road a year later or something like that. So those are the different, if you think about it, the three different instances in which we're trying to infuse data into the process. One is the issue report, one is the policy development process itself, and the other is a review process after the fact. And at some level, just trying to make a kind of cultural change and a set of recommendations and come up with a set of tools that would facilitate these changes. Next slide. So we've done a number of evaluations of previous work group efforts to come up with a set of use cases, you know, types of situations where data would have been more useful had it been used, would have made the process more fluid, would have made it more effective, and where review after the fact would have been valuable. And so that the result of that, as I said, is a number of use cases, which is what geeks call them, but you could call them scenarios in which data would be useful so that we could come up with a framework for how to get the requisite data infused into the process given each of those scenarios. So the next step is develop a framework for data use and metrics in working groups. And as I said, I think what it's going to boil down to, we're still sort of sussing this out, is a kind of flowchart or a decision tree for, you know, is it scenario A? If so, then do, you know, X, Y, Z. And these are questions like, is the data available from already inside ICANN? Is it already part of data that's been, you know, exists inside compliance or has been collected for some reason anyway? Is the data available in public sources? Is there a cost associated with it? What should the process be to get approval for the money necessary to get that data? And then a final sort of large scenario is, do we need to make a data request to contracted parties, either some subset or all of the contracted parties for a specific type of data for a particular PDP? And given the wide range of sizes of registrars in particular the sort of non-standardized way in which the data is stored inside of those organizations, we're trying to develop, again, a set of questions and processes. So it could very well be that there will be a cost associated with getting data out of contracted parties so as not to unduly burden, in particular, the smaller ones. And so that's the process that we're trying to develop. We have a meeting on Monday where we're going to put out a kind of a straw man for requesting data from contracted parties and what that process might look like. So anybody that has the opportunity to encourage folks in the registry and registrar community to come be a part of that meeting, that would be the meeting to attend in particular, if you can do it. Next slide. And I guess that's it for slides. So, I mean, that's basically our work and where we stand with it, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Comments, questions, input for Jonathan, James?
Hi, thanks for the update, Jonathan. Just a question and something I think that may have come up in your work. Have you discussed that some of the data requests, how to determine whether or not those might be sensitive or proprietary data from contracted parties, and how you could either modify the data request in case those objections were made, or even perhaps aggregate and sanitize those stats?
Yes, good question, and that is, again, some of the scenarios that we encounter. So a data request, if we look at this as a flowchart, a data request is made of a contracted party or a subset of the contracted parties, and that there's pushback on that request for reasons X, Y, Z. One of those might be, a confidentiality issue. One of those may be a competitive issue, et cetera. And so another one might be that this is too burdensome for us to produce for you. So each of those then would have, in the framework, a way to be handled. So one instance might be anonymization by a third party, anonymization by ICANN staff. In other words, there's different people that can see different things. And so each of those would represent a different scenario, and hopefully there would be a kind of a flow to follow in each of those cases. That's what we're hoping the work product to be.
That's good, yeah. And I would just want to point out that it makes contracted parties nervous, and I'll give an example. I think several years ago there was a note of transfer problems, and it was listed, there was a top 10 most offending registrars, and GoDaddy was, of course, at the top of the list. But when you adjusted by the number of transfers that were successfully processed, we fell out of the top 30. And so it's one of those things, it's lies, damn lies, and statistics. It's one of those things where if it's not done carefully, it can send the not only, negatively affect a contracted party in the market, but it could even lead a policy development effort down a dead end if they're chasing after a phantom.
That's a really good point, and thank you. And I think confidentiality of data, single use of the data, non-persistence of the data, there's things like that that are, again, we're trying to build in, which is underscores the fact that we want as much contracted party participation in that particular component, right? Not all data requests are going to go to contracted parties, but certainly some of them are, and we want to make sure that we develop a process that makes contracted parties feel comfortable and open to sharing the data that would make those policy development processes stronger.
Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, Jonathan. How is this work related to the recent request of for proposals for the Competition and Consumer Trust study, they mentioned two sets of indicators, a long one and then a short one by a working group, which I found only in a draft that I don't know if it has been approved or not. Is it coordinated or is it a different set of indicators?
Well, funny you should mention that. I'm chairing that group as well. But the CCT is specifically trying to arm the review team that was that's going to be created, according to the AOC, probably a year from now, to look specifically at consumer choice, trust, and competition, and how they've been promoted by the new GTLD program. So that's a very specific review, and there was a very specific board mandate for the community to make recommendations for metrics that might be used by that review team when conducting that review. And so what was recently completed was the work of the implementation team for that effort, and where we looked at what data, if any, would be gone at the point at which it would be needed, and made a request to the board for a survey and an economic study specifically to handle the data that we thought would in fact erode by the time the review took place, so that there would be a baseline for comparison for a delta when the review took place. So it's a separate and specific effort, whereas the work of the PDP on PDPs for PDPs is a process development and creating a set of tools so that a future hypothetical PDP effort could make greater use of data in the future. So one is very specific requests by the board for that review, and the other is a general set of tools to be used in the future future PDPs.
Any other comments, questions? Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
We could close that session then and prepare for the next. If you could give me an indication from the back when you're ready to go with the recording. Thanks, we're good to go. The next session is on the is a report from the Privacy and Proxy Services Accreditation Issues PDP Working Group. And I think Don is here to give us a report. Hi, Don. Welcome. So I'll hand it straight over to Don Blumenthal.
Appreciate it. Apologize if my voice is gone. We spent 7 or 8 hours yesterday in the pilot of the face-to-face. So it's been an intense couple of days already. Kind of like last time, looking around the table in the audience, we could probably continue the face-to-face meeting, given the number of people on the working group who are here, including Thomas, who was our facilitator yesterday, whose voice might be in worse shape than mine, I'm not sure. In any event, since the last time we spoke in London, we've gotten into the most interesting what's turned out to be the most interesting and in a lot of ways the most important part of proxy privacy. You know, we've spent our time talking about the issues of relay, a person trying to get information to the registrant who's using proxy privacy. The proxy privacy service, and I'm going to be sloppy on terms here, or reveal the situations where the information behind the proxy privacy registration is made, is released. We've split reveal, which is a traditional term, into two categories. Disclosure, which is where the information is released but only to a requester, and reveal, which is where the, and publication, which is a situation in which the information behind the proxy registration is posted to the public who is. It's like I said, Reveal, we're working on Reveal currently. We wrapped up Relay a while ago in theory, but these two topics circle back on each other a lot. So as much as we've tried to focus on oh, thank you. Short break here. Whoa, service. I don't get this in NOMCOM meetings. where was I? So in any event, as you can see on the slides, I think we've covered, and when I say covered, come to consensus on some of the fundamental issues. That requests have to be forwarded, but subject to commercially reasonable measures. It's acceptable, say, for a proxy privacy service to have spam filters in place, or some other screening mechanism to adjust for where a requester is clearly just harassing, or whatever other term you want to put on it. In those cases, there should be some flexibility to filter. The other area where we really focused on was issues of, say, requests from law enforcement or issues concerning domain name abuse. And when I say requests from law enforcement or domain name abuse, I'm talking about requests for voluntary production. Obviously, a court order is going to trump pretty much anything that we put in place. If a U.S. district court says produce the information, it's going to happen. We were also suggesting that there be some kind of standard mechanisms, not necessarily standardized across the industry, but looking for some suggestions, formats, guidelines, so that there's some kind of a reasonable expectation for people who are putting in the reveal requests on how it's going to work. We're still dealing with, and I'm going to put a caveat on this, we covered some of these issues yesterday, but we have not had time to review our conclusions and to distribute them to the people who weren't present yesterday. So when I say we've come to certain conclusions, this is as of a week ago. Anything we did yesterday is still quite tentative, but we're still looking at issues of forwarding paper request for reveal. Is that necessary? And if so, can proxy privacy service providers charge a reasonable fee for that? What kind of obligations are there on a proxy privacy provider to inform the requester when they've not forwarded or when there's been a refusal to provide necessary information? Reveal is I think turned into even more complex than I expected it to be. I think partly because of our for a few reasons. There's a lot of practical elements in Relay and Reveal and how they work, and how they work in different sectors. Because of the makeup of our working group, we focused a lot on the intellectual property community. Because of the realities of government, we've not had much participation from law enforcement. That's kind of been my job, but I've been out of law enforcement for a few years now. And while I'm still involved in anti-abuse, the issues there are a bit different. But the fact is the models for law enforcement and anti-abuse are different, and their requirements are different, and a lot of our work right now has been focusing on identifying the different needs and making sure we cover all of them. excuse me. We've discussed issues of accredited, whether there should be some kind of accreditation for requesters. And when I say accreditation, I'm not necessarily talking about anything heavy duty. It could be self-accreditation, but whether, you know, some level. We have focused very heavily on the issues of terms of service. To what extent should accreditation systems urge or require proxy privacy providers to post the situations under which they will reveal, I'm going to use the general term, reveal or relay, what's a baseline that they must do, and then possibly proceed past that or have additional guidelines, additional requirements. Issue of excuse me, how requests are put in, you know, online forms, email. I think we're at the point where we have decided that there must be easy ways to do it. Information must be forwarded. There has to be a mechanism for reveal. And I think, to be honest, at this point where we're drilling down, and part of our job is going to be to decide what is our role and what's the role of implementation going to be, the eternal battle. We do get into issues of this is how it works, and I think we have to, because looking at the real world helps frame our policy decisions. But at times it's been difficult to draw the line on where we stop and an implementation team picks up. We're a little bit behind schedule, but I'm not concerned about that because I think we set a very aggressive schedule up front. I am hoping that we can be writing, if not complete, with our draft by Marrakesh. I think yesterday's session was really very helpful in driving ahead our reveal and relay discussions. We have one more major topic to deal with, which is termination of services. I'm not going to anticipate. I expected reveal relay to be complex, but not as complex as it is. And I'll just add one other plea, although I may have found my my source yesterday. Again, because of the makeup of the working group, we have focused on proxy privacy providers who are affiliated with registrars. Some of the issues that we tackle may play out differently with independent proxy privacy providers. And that's another gap in our resources. So if anybody knows of an independent proxy privacy service provider who is willing to talk to us or even better join the group, please let me know. We've already planned outreach to law enforcement, trying to get them to at least participate on a one-off. I know those people. I still need to find an independent company. I'll open it up to questions or comments from people who are on the group and think I'm completely off the wall on something I said.
Thank you, Don. I would like to encourage everybody to ask questions.
Excuse me.
James, please.
Thank you, and I just wanted to say thanks to Don for the update, and thanks to everyone who came out a day early. Like, these ICANN meetings are not long enough. Came out yesterday, and I think really made significant progress. And I say that without discounting that these are very complex issues. We have a long way to go, but I think that we moved down the field quite a bit. And thanks again to Thomas for his work in facilitating that discussion. I thought that that was also very helpful. So just, I guess, thank you is my comment.
I would like to add to that just a second here. I think we had a test yesterday of something that could become a model for future working groups. Usually at ICANN meetings, we meet in working groups to present and get community feedback, not really productive working group sessions. Yesterday was a full day of working group work, and I think from what I heard, I wasn't able to be there the entire time myself, but from what I heard is that significant progress was made on a lot of issues, which may be easier when you sit face-to-face to each other than if you have a weekly call for 1 hour. So this is something that is new for GNSO policy work and could become a model. I think if it's pans out in the future as well, in future tests, that this is a successful model, then we should look at this further. Back to Don.
And I'll add to the list. Thanks to whoever on staff decided we would be the good we'd be the good guinea pig, because it really was helpful.
Any further questions for Don? Privacy proxy is very interesting. Come on. If not, then let's move on to the next topic. I think we're still behind on schedule.
Thanks. All right, so let's stop the recording on that session and prepare for the next one, which is dealing with the GNSO review. Good to go with the recording? Thank you. All right, so the next session scheduled for 11:30, it's now 11:50, is to look at the work going on in the GNSO review, and we've got Jen Wolf here as a counselor. We've also got Larissa Gernick from staff and our colleagues from Westlake who are working with us on the review. So Jen, would you like to say a few words to introduce the topic and then...
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yes, just to introduce the Westlake team who will be presenting the current status of the review, I just wanted to provide for clarification, since I know there was some discussion earlier about the working party and the scope of the work that we're doing. The 360 assessment that's being conducted right now is being formulated and implemented by Westlake as the independent examiner, and that was prescribed in an RFP created by staff. The GNSO Review Working Party is a group of GNSO members who are coordinating that effort and will be providing feedback. We have provided feedback on the design and the questions for the 360 assessment, but the 360 assessment itself is being conducted by the Westlake team as the independent examiner. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. The Westlake governance will be using the feedback provided by the GNSO Review Working Party and other community members to formulate the assessment, ensuring that the tool collects adequate information from a broad group of people to meet the needs of data gathering for their review work. So I just wanted to clarify that. In parallel to this, the GNSO Review Working Party can elect to conduct a self-review once we see the results of the assessment from Westlake. So that's something that will still be on the table as we move this process forward. So I'm going to turn it over to Richard Westlake from Westlake to provide an update on the status of the review. And after he presents, I'd like to come back and just reinforce the importance of everyone at this table in this room completing the survey. I know you're going to give us some statistics about how many counselors have completed the survey to date, as well as other leadership roles. So I'll turn it over to you.
Jonathan, Jen, thank you very much indeed. My name's Richard Westlake, and I'd like to also introduce my colleague Colin Jackson, who's here with me. Now, some of you will be aware that we have done some previous work with ICANN, so we're not totally babes in the wood, but we are very keen to find out as much as we can about what you think, particularly here on the GNSO review. We've been working on this now with the team, Jen Wolf and her team, and Larissa and Matt, since the London meeting, and the 360 is the main vehicle for people to express your views on how you believe the GNSO is functioning, has functioned, and how fit it is to continue functioning into the future. So can I please firstly just stress our invitation to everybody. If you haven't yet been into the assessment to have a look at it, please make your voice heard. The link to the announcement is up here on the screen. We're very happy to pass that on to you, and you will see it repeated two or three times through the course of these short slides. We're also very keen to talk to some people, not everybody, because time simply doesn't allow, but we are keen to talk to people about diving a bit deeper into the issues that are being identified, and people who particularly have views that you simply can't get into enough, can't explain enough within the survey. For those who haven't yet done the survey, you've got a number of options. You can come in and you can do it quite rapidly if time is very, very pressing for you. You have the option, we have both some quantitative where you tick the box. We have some boxes for you to comment further, add comments. And we also have some free-form text boxes towards the end where you can add anything that we haven't asked about that you feel that we should have asked you about or that you want to tell us about. And in the middle, for those who wish to comment specifically in detail on any of the particular constituencies or stakeholder groups or the council itself, there are optional sets of questions in there as well. As I say, they are optional. If you have 10 minutes, please go and give us the 10 minutes. If you have an hour and a quarter to really tell us what you think, we would absolutely appreciate those as well.
So, Richard, if I may, just to make a comment, I mean, this is available to every councillor, everyone in this room, anyone who has an interest in the GNSO and its business. I know we have a GAC colleague here. You know, it's open to any group or individual to put their comments or opinions in. So just to make it clear, this is wide open and available to anyone to participate in.
Thank you, Jonathan. Really useful to add that comment. Thank you. Yes, it is open. We are very keen to get a very broad cross-section of perspectives and views. And as Colin will show you in just a moment, there are some areas, there are some perspectives which we think are unquestionably of value and importance where there has been a significant lack of input to date. So I would encourage you either to complete these yourselves or alternatively, and even better, go and twist the arms of your colleagues who you know do have views that will be worth hearing. In addition to both the 360 and the one-to-one interviews, we have been doing a very extensive desktop review of documentation as well. So we're really trying to get full triangulation on the processes, our own perspectives through the record, written record, the one-to-one interviews, and also the results of the survey. I'll hand over, if I could, now to my colleague Colin, to give you some of the statistics where we are so far.
Thank you. I wonder if we could have that slide moved on to end again. That might be a good one to start with. Thank you. This shows the numbers that were done as at this morning, I think it was. These are 119 completed responses. Now, as Richard said, as Jonathan said, this is available to everybody in the GNSO. It's available to everybody in ICANN. It's, in fact, available to the entire internet. But I think expecting 6 billion responses might be a bit too much, but we would appreciate a few more than we have. In particular, I've split it out here by the particular parts of ICANN that people claim as an affiliation when they fill in the responses. As you will see, we have got a reasonable percentage from the GNSO, which you would expect. And that's fine, although there is still room for plenty more, please. We could really do with some more from the GAC, really, because the GNSO and the GAC, clearly their objectives come up against each other sometimes. That is a source of comment is coming out through the work we've done so far, is the relationship between the GNSO and the GAC and the policy that is created here and how it is seen as acceptable or unacceptable in government forums. So we would really appreciate some, and if there is a GAC person here who can take that back, we would really appreciate that. A few more views from GAC members. I might say these are something Richard didn't say, but is completely true, is anything you fill into the survey tool is does not have to be attributable to you. You are not speaking for anybody, or you do not have to have your name attached to the feedback if you wish. We ask that you give your name, but if you tick the box that says, please maintain this as confidential, we will protect that confidentiality. So we will not identify your comments to you or to your company or to your government or any such arrangement. So we would really like to understand what people who are involved think, whether or not they are concerned about upsetting their employer. We also note on here that there's very little feedback from the ESSAC, which again is a bit of a shame, and we will be doing our best to beat up ESSAC people, but if you know any, please do that for us. Again, because of the obvious relationship here, you make policy for the DNS and they do their best to stop people breaking the DNS, to put it crudely. So there is an overlap and one might even say a conflict of interest in areas that we would like to explore in the course of this review. Now, some figures we haven't got put up on the slide, I don't think, are the numbers of people who are related to this, to the actual review, who have completed the survey instrument. As at this morning, I think 7 councillors had filled in the survey, which is better than it was a couple of weeks ago, but I'm looking around this room. There's a reasonable number, more than 7 of you, and it'd be really good if we could have some more, please. It is important. Thank you very much. But I think really anybody who's involved with the GNSO should do this. It is not a greatly onerous use of your time, and it's essential for us to be able to provide you with a quality review. Can we move on to the slide? Next slide, please. This is a timeline. Richard, do you want to pick this back up again?
I'm happy to do that. The survey is currently open, but it does have to close at the end of this ICANN meeting. So it has been extended twice, and this is the final chance for people to complete it. It will be closing on Friday this coming week, Friday the 17th, at the close of business on Friday. So please, if anybody does wish to complete it or has started it and wants to come and finish it or wants to encourage someone else to do so, you have until Friday of the 17th of October to do that. From there, we are continuing also to do some interviews remotely and continuing our desktop review. We then provide our draft report, our initial report, in the middle of December to the GNSO review team, the GNSO Council review team, and they will then feedback, after which we will complete our final version, send it to public comment, and then we'll have a final report, as you see, in April. So our timeline over the next 2 months is quite tight, quite compressed, so if you want to have your say, and we please encourage you to have your say, please do so now. Thank you very much. We know that during the ICANN week you are all absolutely occupied. From experience, we also know there is the occasional 5 minutes you take out to clear your emails. Please use 3 of those 5 minutes to log into the survey.
I'll just add one thing, if I may. As I would just back up what Richard said, there is often time sitting in meetings, as I've observed, to clear things or to fill in surveys. But ultimately, this is GNSO's review. We can't do it unless you tell us what you think, unless you provide us with the input.
And could we please have the final slide? Those are the links. The top link there is the link to the announcement, and also to the translated versions. For those for whom English is not your first language, the survey is available in all the United Nations languages, and we are happy to send those out to you for completion. As of this morning, the non-English versions of the survey, we have a grand total in non-English surveys of 0. Not one person has requested the survey other than in English. So we would very much appreciate those. The announcements have gone out in the UN languages, so people should be aware of it. We certainly are aware that some of the people who have completed it in English is not their mother tongue, but please, if it is easier for you to speak in any of the other languages, or you know colleagues who might be put off by an English language survey, encourage them, please. The link is there, and you can find that through the first link on the screen now. And the link to the 360 assessment, there's a shorter one, a goo.gl link. For those who can't read it but have a pen handy, goo.gl/KQDO. You can find that, you can ask Larissa, you can ask any one of us. We're very happy to forward the link. And in your grab bag when you registered, you will find a postcard with the link there as well. Thank you, Chairman.
Got a question from Stefan.
Thanks, Jonathan. Stefan van Gelder speaking. I'm part of Jen's group working on this. Two questions to you. You've repeatedly mentioned that you can't do this without sufficient feedback. What is your measure of what is sufficient feedback, i.e. how many surveys do you need, how many surveys filled in do you need to feel confident that you've got a good view of what the community wants? And if you don't reach that level, what is your takeaway on what should be done next? And is it a reflection of the way the survey is structured? Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I'll comment on how many I think we should get, and I'll leave Richard to pick up what we do if we don't. In my view, looking at a council like this, I would expect a very large majority to have done it. It's not that hard, and you are the council of the organisation. And I'm sure we could reach a reasonable level of validity if we got to 70 or 80% of council. But I question why we wouldn't get 100%, frankly. Of the broader GNSO community, I think we have currently... The different constituencies and stakeholder groups, the numbers we have, and I'm working from memory here, range between about 19 and 8 per stakeholder group or constituency. 8 is really a bit thin. We would like to see, of the active people in that, half of each would be at least a good start. And we would like to get as many community members as possible. We're particularly interested, as I stressed in my part of the presentation earlier, in some of the other SOs and ACs in ICANN, some of the other parts of the ICANN community that have policy relationships or objectives that may overlap or conflict with GNSOs. And we're particularly interested in getting some from them as well.
Thanks, Colin.
Stefan, could I just add to that? Three comments in particular. One, in terms of getting enough statistically valid or valid information from the survey, if we had been seeing a really broad diversity of perspectives coming through, I would be very, very concerned with the numbers we have today. As it stands, we do already have a relative consistency as to what the issues are in a large number of areas, or not a large number, but a significant enough number of areas, quite often with 180-degree opposing views on those particular points. So we do have sufficient information there to help us focus our thoughts. If we don't get the participation, then I think that itself is valid input, if you like, by its absence in terms of how the GNSO is functioning and would be functional. In terms of your question about would it be a reflection of the survey structure, I think I can say quite reasonably confidently the answer is no, because people don't know the structure until they log in, and we know the number of people who log in to complete it. And we do see the majority of those who log in to complete it, do complete it. And many of the names that don't complete it are names that are completely unknown and relatively obscure, and I suspect in many cases simply tire kickers who are curious have a look at this and say, no, this isn't me. Finally, what is Plan B? Well, Plan B is that we have extended already twice. We do have significant amount of desktop review. We do have significant answers already. I just don't want them to dominate if we can avoid it. And finally, we are doing some one-to-one interviews, which is in many cases validating and in other cases giving greater depth. Thank you. Could we possibly move to the next slide so that people can contact us if you need to?
And we've got a couple. We've got a few more in the queue to ask questions or make comments. I've got Marilyn, Maria, and Volker at this stage. Marilyn, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. If you haven't taken the survey, I would urge you to do so, and certainly in our constituency and SG meetings and the ALAC meetings, perhaps we can encourage that, and all will. But I'm going to make a couple of observations as someone who has taken the survey. It is, to me, actually not a survey about the GNSO at all. It is a survey about the policy practices of the GNSO's policy council and community. And I say that because a survey, a study on the GNSO would actually have to go into much more detail about the functioning of the SGs and constituencies and the support provided by ICANN to support the high-quality functioning of such organs. That is not addressed at all and has been an ongoing area of concern by many of us in terms of the demands that are placed upon the GNSO as one of the three supporting organizations and the barriers to success that exist in terms of lack of ICANN-focused support. Now, some of that support has been forthcoming recently, but my point is just the survey is not in any way addressing the feedback about how the support that ICANN is providing to a supporting organization and distributed across the supporting organization is helping to strengthen the effectiveness of said groups. I mention that because when we get into talking about participation in working groups, or we get into dissecting what might make the policy development process more effective, more informed, more efficient, etc., remember that the critters that need to populate those working groups come from within the constituencies, the supporting organ, the SGs, and of course the ALAC and elsewhere. So I think to me we're missing that in terms of the survey we are doing. The second thing that I found quite strange was that I was allowed to comment on other SGs and constituencies that I may or may not actually know anything about. I might have an opinion about them. Might be a good opinion, might be a bad opinion, but there was no safeguard to me on whether or not I was really qualified to make a comment about the registrar SG or the registry SG or any other entity, which I thought was a bit strange. And I don't really see how you can safeguard against that now, because a disgruntled member of a group could say negative things as someone who is positive about a group, whether they know anything about it or not, could also say positive things. Then I would just say that I think it's very difficult for many members of SGs and constituencies. I won't comment about the ALAC, perhaps they could comment themselves, to fill out some of the questions. If they skipped the multiple choice and went directly to writing in the box, perhaps they could then provide relevant information. But many members of constituencies participate through elected officers or through counselors or through designated representatives on working groups. They are behind the process. They are helping to devise the policy statement. They are doing the analysis. But they themselves may not have the direct experience that would make them feel comfortable in filling out some of the questions.
Thanks, Marilyn. Would either Richard or Colin, would either of you like to respond to any of that?
Address some of those points.
I think perhaps, Marilyn, thank you for those comments. Thank you for those views. 2 points. One is that the survey has been designed very much with our terms of reference in mind, And we do believe that we will have inputs that will allow us to respond to the points in our terms of reference. Remember, this is only one of three data gathering means, one also being the one-to-one interviews we're conducting, and the other one, which is the most extensive time-wise and the least visible, is the desktop review of the documentation. So we're seeing matters of meeting process, speed of process, how processes are functioning, where there appear to be concerns expressed regarding lack of support and so on. And I think that's really where we're going to be coming from, that this, I would say really, that this is just one of the three data gathering mechanisms, Marilyn. The other one, we were very keen to ensure and to encourage as great participation as possible, so starting putting up walls even within the survey saying you can't comment on this area was something that we resisted. What we have got as a bit of a cross-check is we have asked people to identify the major area within the GNSO in which they participate or within ICANN in which they participate, and most people have responded in those areas, so clearly that will help us just to see, in many cases, the perspective from which they're coming. But of course, this is exactly the sort of area or reason why a greater number of responses should help us to see overall views rather than just simply one or two outlier voices.
Yes, I'll just comment on that. And so, and if there are loud voices, we need to hear them. Actually, because as Richard says, we, so long as people fill in the survey, at least reasonably honestly, we can tell what their affiliation is, what their interests are, how much they've participated, and in what. And if they have something to say, then we would rather have that, and we will place our own judgment on how much weight to put on it.
Thanks both. I've got a queue just to let you know who's in it. I've got Maria, Volker, Avery, and then we'll go to the mic. Floor mic.
Thanks. Maria Farrell speaking. I am also one of the small majority who has filled in that survey. Happy to announce, and I encourage anyone else to do so. Possibly one reason, apart from general inertia, for the low response rate is that the review is not really what many in the GNSO Council had envisaged or desired, in that it is an awful lot narrower in scope, in methodology, in terms of its inputs and in terms of its expected outputs. Many of us do see this review, unfortunately, as a lost opportunity to look at the structural difficulties of the GNSO that we have inherited from the last review, the structure that makes it difficult to come to agreement and consensus on substantive issues. So, and despite the best chairing foreseeable and the most, in good faith and very, very vigorous participation by many, many people, the GNSO is not functioning as a policy-making organisation as well as it could and should. And I think the reasons for that are pretty clear. The structure we inherited from the last review imposed by the board, many people said at the time that it inhered categorically against substantive discussion, against the ability to build and create consensus across the houses. It's just mathematically not possible to get agreement because of, very, very foreseeable structural features of the current model. And so, when we look at the very de minimis approach that's been taken to this review, I'm not going to shoot the messenger. I think Jen Wolfe is doing a superb job. I think you guys will do a great job. But it is a very de minimis review. It's the appearance of a review. It's very much board-directed to be as minimal as possible, to be as quantitative as possible, to allow in as few qualitative viewpoints as possible. We only have interviews because many of us, shouted very loudly in Singapore and then in London that there needed to be qualitative inputs to this review. So, so I think that may be partly a reason for the low uptake in participation in that survey. People often talk about ICANN as being a model that's being it's like an aeroplane that's flying, and you're fixing the aeroplane as you're flying. In terms, it's an analogy or a metaphor constantly used. I would say that this review is a little bit like you're going on an aeroplane trying to get somewhere, and after the journey is concluded, you get this this review that says, well, was the coffee good? Was the check-in okay? Were the cabin crew nice? Yes. Unfortunately, the plane crashed. It's as if we're going through the motions of asking about these all of these kind of managerial, technocratic, superficial aspects of the precise function, you know, we're here for, and we're not looking at, hang on, are we able to make policy? Is the policy good? So, you know, and I think one of the methods you're looking at, the desk review, very important, but it only looks at what the GNSO is doing. It doesn't, by nature, that information does not look at what the GNSO is not doing and cannot do. So, you know, that's possibly why some of the people aren't putting in as much input as they could. I don't want to shoot the messenger. I don't think it's your fault. I think it is the fault of the board, and I think we have to keep saying that. Just briefly, Philip Shepherd at our meeting in London pointed out that we're really having to hold the feet to the flame of how this review is being done, even if it wasn't living up to board's public statements in terms of the scope and the methods. So, you know, good work. Please keep doing it. But please, that's, I think, some important political context that may help you to understand why take-up is not perhaps what it might have been.
Thanks, Maria. Good set of points and well made. I'm going to just defer to the floor mic because it's uncomfortable standing there and we around the table are seated, and then I'll come back to Folker and Avery, who are next in the queue.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Perrin, and after what Maria just said, this will seem even more banal and trivial than I thought it would sound. But I would give you fair warning, I'm going to bring up this issue again and again, and I'm an incoming councillor, so get ready. The yellow type is illegible, and I can barely read it from here, and on ICANN diagrams we're very fond of white type on pale, and it's illegible. So if we could switch the color of that type, oh good, thank you. But this is just a generic statement that I will make again and again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephanie. We've got Folker next, and then Avery.
Yes, thank you. Folker Greimann speaking. I'm taking the questionnaire right now. Very helpful. The link is in the Adobe, so you don't even have to type it. Just go to the Adobe chat and tap and click on the link. So there's no reason not to do it. One question that I have is regarding the possibility of anonymous comments. I assume that you guys know who commented.
Yes, this is true. In broadly, this is true. At a greater level of detail, what happens is that people are asked to fill their correct name in line with the appropriate ICANN procedures. But provided they tick the box that says, please keep this confidential, then we will not attribute those, but we will still know who they are.
Unless they put Mickey Mouse.
Yes, I mean, there were one or two who were marked from obviously fictitious names, but mostly that is not the case, and we would strongly urge people to use their real names, please.
Yes, I think this is helpful, and this is also very good to assure the quality of the results. Another question here to that same aspect is, do you see any, use a loaded word maybe, astroturfing, i.e. identical responses to the questions from multiple respondents, or is this really a good mix of individual responses that are individually thought out?
I would have to say that too many responses has not been a problem for us so far. And to answer your question slightly more directly, no, there we have seen no evidence of that. There is a good range of views. That said, there are some of the same issues come out in different ways, in people's own words, again and again.
Thank you. Very reassuring. Keep up the work.
Right. Avery.
Thank you. I want to, first of all, pretty much back up everything that Maria said. Fortunately, there are the boxes that one can fill in with our particular positions and with their rants. And I really want to encourage everyone to go back and take it, because you don't want to leave the rants just to people like me.
Thanks, Avery. I've got any comments on the floor, Mike? go ahead. There's a response first from the guys at Westlake, and then we'll come to the
Could I just respond briefly to Avery that for those who have had the persistence to complete the survey, there is a box at the very end, say, is there anything else you want to tell us about? And I have to say that one person so far has used that extensively, and I suspect sat up all night. We have a page and a half of tightly focused comments, closely spaced. We're very happy to receive those, Avery, from you or for anyone else who feels that the questions have not been adequately covering the issues you want to address. Thank you.
That also avoids the concern that some have raised that it is purely a quantitative survey. There is ample space for you to type material for us to read, and we will read it and we will take it into account.
Yeah, quick response. I think the
issue is not with the survey. It's with having heard that categorically the board doesn't want to see any structural change.
Over to the floor, Mike.
Good afternoon. My name is Kavu Saroste, member of GAC. I am not speaking on behalf of GAC, but I am speaking on behalf of one of the GAC members. I have always appreciated your work. Jonathan knows that when you are in a GAC meeting, I always express sincere appreciations with your devotions, with the precisions of the work you do. I have some general comment with respect to this review process or review of GNSO. Something that I have been involved for many years, whenever we have a question of survey, it becomes very, very critical and difficult. First, what you asked, if it is not clear, you would not get a clear answer. Second, what you receive, if it is not a clear answer, and it is multidimensional, you have difficulty how to interpret that, and you, if you receive contradictory responses, you have to find out the way between those and put them together, and it might have impact on your review. And the most important part would be that how you analyze and how you come up with the results, and then to be in a way to implement that. But this is not the purpose of the question, my question. My question is that, how frequently you review? Do you have time to implement the result of that review, or you are in the continuous review process? One review after another review, and you take, or it takes considerable amount of your expertise in order to go to the process, in order to ask the question, reply the questions, and analyze that, and then there would be little time to implement it before to implement and leave the system to be a little bit stable for some time. I don't have any time span to propose you, but you start another, so you may not have sufficient time to do that, and that might have impact on the entire process that the community expects from you. So I would request you kindly that have you have any, let us say, clear strategy of the review, how frequently you review, and how much time you need for the review, and after that, when you implement that, how much time you leave or you continue with what you have reviewed and now you implement that to see, to have a real reflection of what you have reviewed. Or you go to the continuous review. I'm sorry, this is a very general question. You may not have any clear answer, but that is question. And I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the question. I could make a stab at answering, but I'm going to look if anyone else would like to comment. I mean, these are board-initiated reviews. They're part of a sequential and structural, it's sort of baked into the structure, if you like, that there are periodic reviews of the organizations. Anyone else like to comment? Maria?
Yeah, just very briefly to answer that, the reviews are bylaw mandated. Their frequency and you know, how often they happen, I think it's supposed to be every 5 years, it's set out in the bylaw, so that's where it comes from. It's pretty clearly, excuse me, mandated.
The other question was, the other part of the question was clearly, are we in a state of sort of continuous wheel spinning, if you like? You know, do we get to implement the outcomes of those reviews? Larissa, did you have something you wanted to respond on that?
No, I just wanted, Maria already covered that, and the other element to it is from a review process. It takes generally about 6 months to prepare for the review, anywhere from 9 to 12 months to conduct the review, and after the review process has been concluded, then the implementation phase, depending on the kinds of recommendations that are being addressed, implementation phase could take any number of months, and then if you do the math, that's what's left until the next cycle begins.
So I'll make one brief other stab, and then I think we should go continue with the various questions that are in the queue. But I don't personally feel like we're in a state of continuous response to review inputs, although there are. We do have, as you heard, the Standing Committee on Improvements that's running continuously to look at tweaks to our processes and continuous improvements, and seek to continuously improve of our own accord anyway, notwithstanding any input from reviews. I'm very conscious there's a queue been building. I think, Volker, you've been in line for some time. Sorry, did I miss you? I didn't tick you off. Avery, did we cover you? Yeah. Okay, so let's go to the floor mic then.
Yes, thank you. This is Ann Aikman-Scalise with Lewis Roca Rothgerber, and I'm a member of the IPC. I'm IPC delegate to the Standing Committee on Improvements, and I'm also on the Policy and Implementation Working Group. And my question really relates to the coordination issue that Jay Scott raised, or what my mother used to call dovetailing when you're making a meal. And you've got your green beans over here and your roast beef over there, whatever. You need to make it all come together at the same time. And on SCI, as well as when we're looking at the issue of consensus levels in the working groups and in policy and implementation, when we're looking at when a new issue arises and what methods we have to address, for example, a conflict between GAC advice and GNSO advice, the question becomes how we incorporate results of GNSO review into the work of those working groups and of SCI, and how that comes together. When you look at timing, for example, right now policy and implementation is looking at trying to bring together a preliminary report, potentially, in time for Marrakesh. And when I look at the timing of this review process with respect to the surveys, I can see, for example, that in December there will be, quote-unquote, initial findings. So it's really a bit of an open-ended question about that relates to the same comment that Jay Scott made about how the work that's currently being done can be affected by the results from the review, and whether there can be any kind of use of the findings prior to the final report. Thank you.
Anyone wish to comment or respond to Anne's input? Marika?
This is Marika. As I at least understand, and I think I saw in the timeline as well, there, you know, there is an opportunity, I think, for the GNSO to provide comments on the initial findings. So I would, for example, foresee if, you know, one of the findings is you really need to do better on the implementation side, you know, the GNSO Council can then comment, well, actually, there is work underway, you know, please take that into account as you finalize your report, or something like that. And I think similarly as well, I guess when we get to the stage of actually implementing some of the recommendations, similarly the council may then want to look, you know, what efforts are already ongoing that actually are addressing some of the recommendations to indeed make sure that it all ties together. So I think at least as I understand the process, I think it foresees those opportunities to at least point out these are areas we're actively working on, so please make note of that in your final report, and as well when we get to implementation we can make sure as well that all those ends tie together.
Thanks, Marika. Philip, over to you.
Thank you. Philip Shepherd from Brand Registry Group. Marie was kind enough to mention my name earlier, I just thought it was worth perhaps, given the context of what she was referring to that I said at the last meeting, and this goes back also to the statements about, you know, what did the board say and what is the board thinking, and how we've been given too narrow a direction. I'm going to quote the resolution of the board for the 28th of September 2013, and that was when the board was discussing the timing of this review. A couple of lines. The expansion of the TLD space has increased the number and variety of stakeholders participating in GNSO policy making, and review needs to take place on schedule to examine whether the current model meets the needs of a new generation of stakeholders. GNSO's structure is unlikely to accommodate the anticipated new stream of stakeholders resulting from the expansion of the TLD space. The GNSO review will be an important vehicle for considering and addressing the issue. The imbalance that is already taking place needs to be addressed by the GNSO review. So I think we need to remember that that was the direction when the board talked about this and what they were thinking about. So when we look at what we're covering in the survey, I hope we're all aware that that is a part of the job in front of us, but by no means all of it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Philip. Any comments or responses from Westland?
Perhaps a very brief one. Thank you, Philip, for that comment. Yes, and we're very conscious of exactly that view. And as you say, our review is specifically not to recommend new structures for GNSO, but within that, we are most certainly considering the issues that the GNSO needs to deal with, needs to develop policy for, in the future as well as currently and in the past. So we're absolutely focused on that area, and we encourage other people to do the same. Thank you.
Wendy.
Wendy Seltzer with an implementation comment and then a more general comment. The implementation comment is, would you please put the GNSO review at westlakegovernance.com email address on the page where the surveys themselves are listed if you want to encourage people to send follow-up emails. Because after having completed the survey and found that it seemed to ask lots of detailed questions but did not give me the chance to answer the questions that I thought needed to be answered, I had to open a different browser to get back to the spot where that email address was visible. And so my more direct concern about the scope of the review echoes some of those concerns that that you've heard, that it seems we're being surveyed on very specific details of the way the structures have worked, but not asked about overall how this serves the communities that are coming together in GNSO and how this serves the multi-stakeholder model and whether restructurings of GNSO processes could better serve that. And as folks who have spent a lot of time engaged in this process, I think we could offer more useful input to those questions than ticking a bunch of boxes, agree, strongly agree, or disagree.
May I comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Colin.
Thank you, Wendy. I think you may just have booked yourself an interview, by the way. But seriously, yes, we've tried to balance that in the design of the survey. We tried to balance it so that those who wish to go through and tick yes, no, agree, disagree, or even no opinion, no opinion, no opinion can do that. And we've tried to leave space for comment. My apologies if that wasn't clear from the outset of the survey. It was tested a few times. The email address, I wasn't aware it wasn't on the master webpage, but I'm sure we can get that corrected.
Thanks. Just to follow up, while I saw the option to tick every circle, no comment, it still requires an awful lot of manual labor to get through the survey if one really wants just to answer a few pointed questions.
That one was tested a few times. There was a reason for that choice, actually, which was that we really need to be able to determine how far somebody got through it before they rage quit the whole thing.
Thanks. Method in the madness.
Yes.
That's probably a pretty thorough airing to the issues in and around both the 360 review and the work of Westlake. Jen, did you want to close with any remarks?
Yes, thank you for the discussion. It's all very helpful to us as we continue our work as the review working party. For those of you who are part of our working party, we are meeting tomorrow at 5:30. I know there's a lot of other meetings going on, but it really will be important to have your participation as we discuss how we'll be moving forward in receiving the initial report and providing feedback. So that is our next big initiative as we move forward. I also just wanted to mention, it didn't come up, but there is going to be a follow-on survey about working groups that will be sent out to the community at large, as well as all of those who have taken the survey. When is that supposed to be released? Do we have a date?
It will be shortly after the close of the main survey, and the date is to be decided whether people are suffering ICANN exhaustion in the week immediately following, whether to launch it that week or the week after.
Thank you. So look out for that additional survey about specifically working groups. And again, I encourage all of you to take the time to complete the survey. And we understand, of course, maybe not every question has addressed your concern. That is why we have the catch-all question at the end, and really encourage you to take the time and tell us what you think, because it will be incorporated into the review and the report.
Thanks, Jen. I've got a last word from Ron.
Thanks, Jonathan. Very much appreciated. Richard, Colin, nice to see you. With Jen and others, I'm part of this group, and I got to this room a little bit late, unfortunately, but I wanted just to ask, when the report, as the independent review is complete, to whom or to which institution, which part of this institution will you deliver it? Will you be delivering it to the GNSO Council? Will you be delivering it to the board? Who's actually going to get that document? And will this go through public comment before it goes to that particular body? Thank you.
Our process, if I can just answer that for you, Ron, is point one is that our draft report goes to the review, the GNSO review body panel, working party, I should say, the GNSO review working party in December for GNSO review working party and GNSO comment and feedback. Our subsequent report as a result of that will then be put out in the normal ICANN process for full public comment before it becomes a final report.
Great, thank you. I'm glad we got that on the table. Thank you.
Chairman, could I add one final comment, which is simply just before I close, I'd very much like just to thank the 13 people in the room who have taken the survey this morning. Thank you.
Would you like to name anyone who hasn't? No breaches of confidentiality here. All right, so thanks. I think that was a very useful session. We let it run on a little bit. It's clear that there were some strongly held and comprehensive views to be got out, so that's useful. This, just to orient you, so we'll draw a line under that session. That's the review, GNSO review session closed. What we had planned prior to lunch now is a Q&A session with the council chair candidate, which is myself. In addition, we had planned to have some time on sort of what's called open and substantial strategic discussion. There's a couple of items we could cover there. Frankly, after lunch, we've got substantial opportunity to prepare for meetings with Board, GAC, and CCNSO tomorrow, as well as with Fadi. So I think we can roll the strategic elements into the after-lunch discussion. I feel confident that we can deal with that, as well as the motions in the 2-4 slot. We've got a decent lunch break prepared for an hour, which is great. I believe we can maybe even access the terrace outside, so we'll talk about that in a moment. So my suggestion to you is, given that it's just coming up for 12:45 now, we take the opportunity to hand the chair of the meeting over to Volker and give you an opportunity to ask any questions or make any comments in general that you might feel about the chairing and the role of the chair, and my role in it to date, sort of activity to date, and prospective activity in the year ahead. I'm very open, in my mind, and together with the vice chairs who constructed this agenda, I don't have a fixed format or view of how we take this. I'm happy to make a couple of opening remarks and then do a Q&A. So that's probably the way we'll do it, and if it takes 5 minutes, it's fine. If it takes 20 minutes, it's fine.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, seeing that we only have one council chair candidate, Jonathan, there is not the format that we had last time of questions answered by both candidates does not really present itself as a way to go ahead. So I would like to change the format here slightly, as John has suggested, by allowing everyone to post questions to the candidate, and additionally maybe put forth ideas of what things could be changed, could be handled better, have a review of the past year of the work of the candidate. And I would like to invite everyone to raise their hands, come to the microphone, and speak up with any questions, suggestions, comments, or criticisms they might have.
Yeah, thanks, Volker. And if you'll just permit me, just make a couple of remarks. I mean, you'll see there's a candidate statement. In some ways, it follows on from previous candidate statements, so it's not entirely new. There are references to others. I'm sure some of you would have looked at it. Some of you may not have. Perhaps it's best to just leave it at that and hear if there are any questions, comments, or input in and around the role and function of the chair or myself in that position.
Okay, Thomas, please.
Yeah, I think that, Jonathan, you've sent your new statement, and you've also added the statement that you previously produced, and I think that what you've delivered is pretty much in line with what you've offered when you started. I have no doubt whatsoever that you're going to be reelected. And since we have another term of collaboration, I'd like to ask you in which ways you think the council should better support you in achieving the goals of the council. So I think this is not a unilateral thing. You know, a chair can only be as productive as the council or the committee supporting him allows him to do.
It's a good question, and it ties very much into this whole challenge we've had of, I mean, I know for all of us, myself very much included, it's been this particularly, I mean, Let's stop for a moment just to pick up the point you made originally, I suppose. I do think we, and it's not me, I think we've collectively achieved a lot in the last couple of years. I mean, I really feel that is in many ways we feel open to be critical, thought out and critical comments of the way in which we work, but we do it in a civil and constructive way. And I feel our output's been pretty good. We've also worked flexibly within the way in which we are able to, without being disrespectful of the structures and processes that we work. Wherever possible, we've tried to operate in a flexible, responsive way. So personally, I feel very proud of the way in which the council has worked and their kind of achievements. And I look around the room and I think of us coming together in Buenos Aires a year ago and working effectively together. I think we've achieved much of that. I think the biggest challenge we face, and I face, and we face together, is finding the opportunity to genuinely put time into particular issues. And quite often, something's thrown out onto the council list or in a meeting, and we appear to just simply not have time to do it justice, to work through it. So, I mean, I would say looking ahead, the biggest challenge we've got is to try and have the time and the opportunity to give issues the time they deserve and to work them through. And I mean, we've had a couple of challenges thrown up this morning, for example, about, you know, making sure we do coordinated and effective work in and around the next round of GTLDs. And there's some existing challenges that are thrown out to us both in terms of the work we do and how we do it. So it's really getting people behind that. That said, I mean, there's some great examples, and I could just look. I mean, for me, it's tremendous that the two NOMCOM appointees, for example, that are here. I know Dan couldn't be here, but I mean, I look at the work you've done on the frustrating and challenging as it's been on all the IGO, INGO, RCRC stuff. You've put hours of patient work into that, trying to nurse that through. I mean, we've just heard with the work that Jen's been working on the GNSO review. So there are plenty of examples around of councillors who have, and so I wouldn't want to suggest that people haven't been productive or put their hard work and hours into things either.
Thanks, Jonathan. Next question, please.
Yes, thank you. Continuing on Thomas' question, compared to one or two meetings ago, I see new elements in the agenda of the GNSO, particularly cross-community working groups, and the discussion we recently had on how to liaise with the GAC and so on. So I would like to go back on this and then the discussion we just had, 360 review shouldn't change anything, while we know that there are new 5-year strategic plans for ICANN as a whole and suggestions from Congress how to separate policy from operations in a very interesting letter. So I want to go back to Thomas' question. Do you think you can keep just working just like this without any additional resources, time, or more methodology?
Is that a question to me, Carlos? Do I think we've got the capacity to carry on? It's a difficult question. I mean, I should say that one of the things there was a meeting yesterday of so-called SO, AC, and SG and constituency leaders together with the senior ICANN staff to look particularly into at least to start to define the problems and issues associated with perception or actuality of excessive workload. And so, I mean, I think that that's something which will need to be, I mean, it's a community-wide issue rather than simply a council issue. And I'm very conscious that, there is a variety of levels of commitment that people can give to this work. I mean, this is technically volunteer work. In practice, for some people, it forms some or all of their job, whether paid or unpaid. But for many people, it's got to be filled in around their job. So I'm always sensitive to that. That's an issue, and I think there are some real challenges to this whole concept of a volunteer model and how we maintain productivity and all of that. That said, I mean, I don't know what the numbers at this meeting are, and this is one of the things that came up in the discussion last night. I mean, there's probably going to be, maybe a couple of thousand attendees at this meeting, and yet the active participation in the work of ICANN from those is much. We have a kind of tip of the iceberg type phenomenon. So it's a mantra for me is that there are different challenges. There's this very broad level engagement, whether through ALAC and other organizations that goes out to mass participation and engagement. But I think sometimes we haven't concentrated enough on the middle, and maybe that goes to the point that Jay Scott says some of it's about how we work. But one way or another, that feels to me like an unanswered challenge or question is getting participation from that sort of middle, if you like, of the pyramid. We've got this sort of expert top. We've had a lot of work on broad outreach and participation, but somehow our active engagement of potentially well qualified participants, either we're somehow not engaging those groups as much as possible. So that feels to me like one way of fixing the problem, if you like, but it's certainly not the whole solution.
Stefan, please go ahead.
Thanks, Volker. Stefan van Gelder. Jonathan, I think the fact that you're running unopposed is probably a measure of the quality of the work that you've done in recent years as chair. Either that or a recognition that you're crazy to do it and no one else wants to do it. But one question of personal interest to me is, when I was chair, I found that it was difficult to combine the outside perception, that the perception that there is outside the community of the way the GNSO and the GNSO Council works. And the outside community tended to look at the GNSO Council chair as basically the leader of the GNSO community, or certainly the leadership. Inside the GNSO community, that's often not the case. So you've got really two different views knocking up against each other, and you're sitting in that chair, which is sometimes a lonely position to hold when you have to both defend the GNSO as a whole outside and not appear to be leading the GNSO inside the group. Is that something that you've found? Is it something that you've been able to balance?
I think Avery would like to make a comment before I respond. And so, okay, I'll respond, and then just, Folk, if you could make sure that Avery gets a chance to talk as well. I mean, I suppose there's different things. First of all, thank you for what I think was a compliment at the beginning, but may have been a recognition of the lunacy.
It was a compliment.
But, you know, I mean, I suppose that's the first thing to respond to, though. I mean, there are many who make that you know, the joke and say, well, is it congratulations or commiserations? It's hard work and thankless, and I don't mean that in a kind of let's all start, you know, feeling sorry for me. But there's definitely an element where there's some significant hard yards to be done. But one of those has been actually working. One of the key things I think I set out to do, and I think we have done as a group relatively well, is start to and I think this is the sort of what I call the PR role of the chair. And I think PR is probably, it could be misconstrued, but it's the outreach, the linking with the other organizations. I think we haven't done I feel much more comfortable, and that's in part due to the work of the liaisons, but with our work with the CCNSO, for example. And we've had some very good, you know, we've come together well with the CCNSO to do the CWG on the stewardship transition, and of course others, the other groups that are chartering that. As you know, there's been good progress made with the consultation group with the GAC. But you're right. There's certainly at times there's a conundrum as to whether, you know, if I'm on a platform or in a situation where, you know, I might be perceived to be the voice of the GNSO, and that's got to be handled carefully. I think for the most part, I think people have come to trust me over the term of being in the chair, that I respect and understand the limits of that and what can and can't be done. I think what's partly helped is that, if not every time, periodically at the front of these ICANN meetings, we no longer have the SO and AC chairs meeting. We have SO, AC, SG, and constituency all coming together. And I've really felt positive about that last night, because it felt to me like we had all of the voices at the table, but in my mind, a proportionate voice for the GNSO by virtue of all of those voices there. So I really, and I didn't feel like any one group was swamped by that. It really felt to me, and maybe a selective perception, and could be challenged on this, I accept that, but no, I didn't feel like anyone was being shut out. You know, CCNSO had a voice, ESAC has a voice, ALAC had a voice, GAC had a voice. Everyone was able to speak, yet the constituent parts of the GNSO were also represented. So I had a good feeling about that, so that seemed to work okay. But you're right; it's a challenge that's got to be handled sensitively, and I'm sure there's a puddle to step in or a trap to fall into somewhere along the way.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think Avery is next in line.
Thank you. First of all, I actually want to say something that I think that you have dealt with that issue, that you are the chair of the GNSO as the bylaws indicate, and I think you have actually, I know I'm supposed to be asking you questions as opposed to praising you, but I think you have threaded that needle where all the SGs and Cs are insisting on also being there quite well. I kind of wonder about it, because I wonder about what were also all the RALO chairs there. So I wonder, you know, and perhaps that's a discussion for another time and not for this meeting, but I do wonder about that tendency that many people in the GNSO have to sort of I want to be there too. I got to be part of the leaders group, so invite me. So I really do want to praise you for having threaded that needle quite deftly and quite politically, much better than I ever could have done. And so I'm really happy to see you there. Now, one of the questions that I really have, and I did read your statement when it went out, but I forget, did you answer the question of why you want to do this for another year?
That's good. Thanks, Avery. Praise is, by the way, perfectly fine. If anybody else wants to praise, go ahead. Jonathan, do you want to answer that question?
Yeah, thanks. So one quick comment. I mean, just I'm sure it's clear to you, Avery, but I didn't set the invite list last night. I was just reflecting on those that were there seemed to be a good bunch and seemed to work and represent the different interests. In terms of why, I mean, I suppose I've actually got to enjoy this a little bit more as I've got to know and understand how to do the job better, I think. But also, having started off, I felt there were certain things that we had to try and achieve, and I think we're a long way down the road of achieving those, but probably not complete. So there's a point with me where I like to complete a job. I feel part of that completion of that job, just to be very clear, is to effectively hand that over to whomever's coming along next, wherever they come from, whether it's from the existing vice chairs or from outside. And that's clearly will be a key part of this next part, so that it's not just walk away and leave it. But, you know, it's a challenging but also very satisfying to achieve some of the things we've managed to achieve. And I'm not going to go through it as a list, but it certainly... It has its rewards as well as its punishments.
Thanks, Jonathan. Chuck, go ahead. Maybe just to use Avery's microphone for the time being.
Of course you do, because I'll shout no.
I don't believe it's accurate to say that the bylaws say the chair is the chair of the GNSO, chair of the GNSO council. But if it is, and I don't have the bylaws in front of me, then I think we need to change that. I don't think we've ever functioned that the chair of the GNSO council is a leader for the other SGs and constituencies and so forth, nor do I think we want to go there.
Most definitely does say it.
Marilyn?
Thank you. And Jonathan, like others, I want to thank you for your stewardship. I tend to look at these positions as being positions of stewardship. And I think you've done, as we all examine your past contributions. So I welcome the fact that you're interested in taking yet another turn at it. I really also appreciated something you just said about an innovation that has been introduced. And that is in... when I was the chair of the business constituency, I first pushed hard with Fadi about the idea of having a meeting with the chairs plus one, and that has now grown into a regular interaction between the chairs of the SOAC and SGs. I think that is, in fact, a real innovation, and I think I would just ask you, you made a comment about it, but it has... clearly added both an opportunity but a burden of leadership. And I wondered if you might talk a little bit more about, this is a bottom-up consensus-based organization. We've lost our way recently with a kind of a top, I don't mean the council, by the way, or the GNSO, but I think ICANN lost its way recently. Two good examples are the top-down approach that was imposed on the IANA transition and then the accountability mechanism. We're in recovery mode from that. Maybe you might opine just a little bit about the, now we have a new leadership circle, this SOACSG chair. Maybe you might opine just a little bit on how you see that strengthening or contributing to improving the understanding of the board and the CEO and staff on bottom-up consensus-based decision-making.
Thanks, Marilyn. Jonathan, do you want?
Well, you're right. I mean, it does seem like there was a we passed a little bit of a watershed moment. I mean, one of the things that was most striking was we had a coming together, as you well know, Marilyn, and others, at the end of the London meeting of a combined statement from all of the constituent parts of the GNSO on the accountability. And I think you know, one of the things we were hoping to come to before lunch, and we'll probably touch on a little bit after lunch, is the new revised structure for the, or a proposed structure for handling the accountability issues. I think the important thing, that the point that I've taken, is to continually try to remind the board, and I feel we—I mean, something we seem to have to do, just as a general sense, is our sort of institutional memory doesn't seem to go on very long. We seem to have like a kind of memory stack where two or three things come in and the other bits fall out. So I sometimes feel, for example, when we meet with the board, I sometimes feel that they may see me as a bit of a stuck record, because I quite often say, and by the way, let's just tell you, we've done A, B, C, D, E lately, and just so you're aware, and this is D, E, F that we're working on. And so that's, yeah. Anyway, I see you deep in checking this GNSO chair versus GNSO council chair on the bylaws. It's ambiguous, actually. I've read it carefully, and it's not well worded.
Yeah.
To put it that way.
Chuck speaking again. It does say GNSO chair. They're correct. Okay. I don't think we've ever functioned that way. And again, I'll repeat what I said. I don't think we want to function that way, but we can debate that. And I don't think we need to take more time on that now.
Thanks, Chuck. Avery, was that a hand?
Yeah, just a quick comment. I think we actually did function that way until I was chair and the revolution started.
Thank you.
Okay. We have one more from Stefan, and then I would like to wrap up because lunch is waiting.
This is turning into an old boys club discussion, but... I think it's it really isn't a bylaw question, although we do, the bylaws are the guidelines by which we work. I think, I forget who said, I think it was Avery who said you threaded that needle very well, Jonathan, and just to make a clear compliment this time, I do think it's up to the chair to work it out. And I think you've done well in including both the CNSG chairs and the GNSO council leadership in these overall discussions. I also think it's a question of support and the support you can get from the council and the community. And I think you alluded to that earlier on. As you've progressed through this position and people have got to know you and you've got to know them, you probably feel that support is there now and you've got more confidence to just be a PR spokesman for the GNSO as a whole. And I think that's probably how we want to define that. More as a PR, you know, go out and strongly advocate for the GNSO rather than just a leadership position of the GNSO. I think, you know, that the problem is making sure that outside of this room or this community, the perception of the GNSO remains positive and productive.
Yeah, and thanks, Stefan. That's actually a very helpful cue, even though it may not have been intended to be, but I really appreciate it, because actually it's about, in many ways, that the area to be very comfortable on is not about the policy or expressing a single policy or a view of the GNSO, but rather structural and procedural and relationship components of that is very comfortable territory now to be on, particularly because I've become ever more familiar with it. But, you know, you're right. I mean, that's where one's got to be very careful where to speak and say, well, this is the opinion of the GNSO, because it's almost tautological anyway, because the GNSO very rarely has a single opinion. So for a single entity or individual to express that would be a problem. Anyway, we've probably got...
Thank you, Jonathan. I think this was a very helpful discussion with... we've heard a good couple of questions and comments on not only the candidate himself, but also his vision on the future of his role. I think this is a very helpful discussion for the future going forward. And Jonathan, in my personal opinion, you would do a bang-up job in the next term. So I hope you are re-elected. With this, I would like to conclude this session and invite everyone on the council to lunch. As usual, councillors and everyone working on the GNSO staff eat first, and then everybody else is, of course, also invited.